This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Tim Hasselbeck will join us coming up in about a half an hour. But right now we have the leader of that College Game Day show that you watch each and every Saturday. Our buddy Reese Davis joins us.
That's right.
Reese, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
We are good. I was kidding around with Wes that the for every college football fan, for the very first time, you get a chance to go to Notre Dame. And you walk around their campus and you see Touchdown Jesus. And I mentioned this to Wes. When you hear the fight song for the first time on game day in South Bend, I don't care if you love Notre Dame. I don't care if you hate Notre Dame. There is something magical about that joint that you just kind of stop in your tracks and you go, man, I've heard it my whole life. And there it is, right? So with that said, I know game day is rolling into town. Do you remember the first time you went to a game at Notre Dame?
Oh, vividly, Mark, vividly. I'll try not to commandeer the whole show telling this story, but as you guys know, I went to school at Alabama and grew up in the state and grew up hating Notre Dame because of it. The one-point loss in the Sugar Bowl that cost them a perfect season, a two-point loss in the Orange Bowl the following year, a three-point loss in South Bend, a 7-0 loss in 1980. You see that I was scarred as a child by this. Well, when I was a sophomore at Alabama, Cornelius Bennett knocked Steve Beuerlein into the next calendar year and exercised a lot of demons for Alabama people along the way. So they won that game to beat Holston's first year. I was a junior at Alabama, and the next year Alabama was at Notre Dame. Crimson Tide coming off a huge upset of undefeated LSU the previous week. So a couple buddies and I found tickets. I actually went to my news director at the CBS affiliate in Tuscaloosa and said, I've come upon a ticket for the Notre Dame game. Is there any way I could get a weekend off for it? And he goes, for that, absolutely. Shows you I worked in Tuscaloosa. So we went, and I walked into the stadium having all these childhood memories of despising the place. And you walked in, and it was the old stadium before they expanded it. And you had to walk through the actual end zone, almost through warm-ups, to get to your seat. And you could see Touchdown Jesus and the dome, and it was just a beautiful fall afternoon. And Holtz absolutely obliterated Alabama that day. But it was still a great, great experience to go there for the first time. And to sort of cap the story, I laugh now. I talk about all these times how Notre Dame scarred me as a kid. I would say that I have more close, deep friendships with Notre Dame people probably than anywhere, and I absolutely love going back there. Now, I know you guys are going to laugh at this. I probably talk to Digger once a week, if not more often. In a week like this, I probably talk to him two or three times. Lou and I are still very close. I have a good friend named Skip Strelecki. He's a big Notre Dame guy. I love going there. Love the place, appreciate everything it's meant to college football, and it's been quite the transformation from me growing up hating everything about it, because, they cause so much pain for you, to absolutely loving all the pageantry and everything that goes along with being at Notre Dame.
Reese, I tell folks all the time, it's one of the few places in sports when you go to a venue, and Michigan Stadium happened for me in the late 90s, ironically, a year after I first went to Notre Dame. Augusta National is one of the other venues that you had these incredible expectations, and then you go to them and they actually exceed those expectations, right? I mean, it's just one of those type places. And I think that also makes Saturday's game with Clemson on a night. I mean, they play it at night in the stadium. And even though it's not a full house from a fan capacity, you get kind of the feel of what college football 75 years ago was. One great national game on this iconic stage. And, yeah, we do get it, fortunately, now in our business. We get it a lot. But rarely do we get one tied to such historical proportion like we're getting with kind of like Notre Dame and Clemson.
It's going to be really special. I mean, it's not a be-all, end-all game, as you guys know, because of the possibility of a rematch. It's certainly not guaranteed. Miami's going to have a lot to say about that. but it will have that feel. I think the only thing that will be missing, Wes, is that maybe now that they have the field turf, Notre Dame's not going to be able to grow that grass, to slow down those Clemson receivers a little bit, like they have been accused of doing by USC in the past and others. But it is going to be a great stage, special game, a real prove-it opportunity for the Fighting Irish, and really a challenge for Clemson. Not that we have any questions about them other than health. I mean, they have, they have some injuries on defense. Everyone knows about Trevor's situation. But, they have some people banged up on defense. And, how will the replacements, and they have, uber talented guys ready to step in, but maybe not quite as experienced as the James Kowskis of the world. And how will that impact Notre Dame's ability to move the ball against them? Something they could not do when last they saw each other.
Reese, I mentioned earlier today on the show, I get a sense that from a national perspective, that this is kind of a critical week for Notre Dame. Listen, they've won 29 of 32. That's hard to do against. I don't care what league you play in or who you play against. You win 29 of 32 in college football in this day and age, you're doing something right. But you do get a sense, hey, we know who Clemson is. We know who Bama is. We know who Ohio State is, right? The elite of the elite. But Notre Dame's sitting there going, hey, well, excuse me. You're talking about tradition, history, brand. We just talked about that already. This is really a critical game for Notre Dame to kind of throw their hat into the mix to say, hey, guess what? You guys keep talking about those other three. No disrespect against them, but we're one of those guys too. And again, it's not the end-all game, but it really is a very, very important game for Brian Kelly and their program.
Pack, they want to elevate to being elite. They've made the playoff, but they've been really, really good. And I think you hit it right on the head. Nobody else is doing what they're doing, outside of the elite teams beating everybody they're supposed to beat. But what Notre Dame has not done in years is win one of these games. And, it's been 27 years. It's been the Florida State game since they beat number one. They haven't even played in a game involving a number one team since they got thrashed in the championship game by Alabama. They haven't played one at home since Bush Push. And, they have come up short on this stage numerous times. Doesn't mean they're a bad program. It doesn't mean they're mediocre. It means they haven't been able to take that step to elite. And I think the situation for Notre Dame is this. First, they have to play well to prove that they belong on the same field, as Clemson, or at least in that same realm. If they play close and lose, then it's going to be pretty easy to say, Clemson's missing all these defensive guys. Trevor Lawrence didn't play. No matter how good Big Cinco plays, Uyangalele, he's not Trevor Lawrence. Not yet. He may be someday, but he's not right now. So if Notre Dame plays close and loses, I think there's still going to be that question of saying, they had a tough time with Clemson at less than full strength. So they really need to win the game. It would be a huge boost in perception for the Fighting Irish and really open the door, I think, to the ACC getting two teams in the playoff. I think it's a little bit tougher for them. I mean, certainly if Notre Dame were to win a rematch, they would likely get two teams in. But if Notre Dame can't beat them at home, even without the crowd and with Clemson being at less than full strength, there's not much reason to believe that when Clemson is healthier and 16 is back at the helm, that they would have much of a chance to win that game.
Reese, quickly here, I know we want to talk to you about this show next week at Augusta for sure, but the idea that we're getting the Pac-12 in action this week, joining 2 weeks of the Big Ten, and the volatility of this college football season, seems it might even get a little rockier in the closing kick than it was in the starting sprint.
Yeah, it could, and we talked a lot last night on our College Football Playoff Top 25 show about how you evaluate the Pac-12 teams. And, I'm not an advocate for setting a hard number of the minimum games you need to play to be considered for one of those spots. I just think it needs to be representative and reasonable. If Oregon plays only four games, and I hope they play all of their games, but if they play only four, that's not enough. I don't know what the number is, but there's a there's a low number, I think, that all reasonable people could look at and say, well, that's you know, not representative enough of a season to be able to be included in the playoff. But that's why the committee's there. I think we want them to make subjective judgments. I don't think we should make their task easier. I think we should rely on their expertise to make those types of decisions. And there will be people who disagree. If you have an Oregon that's, you know, 7-0 after a Pac-12 championship game, and you have, say, just for instance, a 9-1 Texas A&M with only one loss at Alabama, or Miami maybe somehow doesn't make the ACC championship game and its only loss is at Clemson. Certainly, you know, if Oregon were to be chosen in that situation, there would be people upset about it, saying it wouldn't, you know, they didn't face the same kinds of tests, and that would be a reasonable thing. But that's what the committee is there to decide, which team is better, and I have confidence in their ability to do that.
Reese, I've got my resume ready to go for the on-site guest celebrity picker for Augusta National. Do I send that to you, or how does that normally work?
Just send it to me along with the video proving that you can shovel snow out of a satellite dish.
Oh,
won't be snow there, but we might need you to do some shoveling of some type if you're going to do that.
Well, let me tell you what, shoveling I can handle. Believe me, that is on my to-do list. I've got that skill, believe it or not. But that is going to be some kind of scene. I know I don't want to fast forward the clock in college football. Believe me, we take every week and embrace it. Mm-hmm. But that is going to be a special scene for game day next week.
We're really looking forward to it. It's a once, really, we hope, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, because ordinarily, obviously, the Masters wouldn't be played this time of year. And these types of shows have been very successful for College Game Day in the past. I know years ago they did one, you know, aboard a ship. We did one in Times Square a few years ago that was very successful and memorable, and this certainly will be. And the people at Augusta National have been terrific in helping us set this up and coming up with ideas to be able to capture the essence of the place and the sort of tying together some major moments on the sports calendar, and to be able to do that and to showcase that place and to be close to the Masters being played while still being part of the college football weekend is something that we're really excited about. We have some cool ideas for the open and the scene set. And obviously, guest picker is a big deal, and we're working hard on that. So, Pac, you might be a little bit down the list at Augusta National, but maybe another week we can work you in there as a celebrity guest picker.
Hey, and just write this down, because I know that you're just giving me a fake left go right on the Heisman pose there on that idea. But I am a 46 long in that green jacket for next week, all right? 46 long.
I don't think the folks at Augusta National would take kindly to the notion of me rolling out there hosting the show in a green jacket.
Well,
probably not, right?
Then I tell you what, under that scenario, I've got mine, and we may not need your services next week there, Mr. Davis, if you don't have that green jacket ready for next week. I'm just telling you.
there are a few things, Pac. You know, man's got to keep his coiffure in order. And when it comes to the situation of fine men's fashion, I don't think green jackets and me go hand in hand. So I wouldn't expect that.
Well, you know, I will tell you, right here in the wine cellar, which is beside the basement down here at the house, I do have Eric Palms gave me an Orange Bowl blazer. I could always show up with that bad boy for a little contrast, just in case the azaleas aren't quite popping in the middle of November.
It's Clemson colored too, Wes. He's got the Clemson colored orange jacket from the Orange Bowl.
And I'll even bring a shovel just in case you need that too. I got the shovel.
Just in case.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
ACC Network. Tim Hasselbeck coming up here in about 15 minutes or so. A lot of guests today, which is good. Dogs are getting a lot of rest, Wes, because Hyper Piper is coming back to the house for a long weekend. And so the boys better rest up.
Oh, boy.
I'm just telling you. All right, it's time for Lumberjacks. Yep. We got stuff to do before we get to Tim.
Josh Macri joins us live from the ACC Network headquarters, home of Packer and Durham Productions. Good morning, Mr. Macri.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Excellent.
Good. Good.
Doing well.
Yeah. Yeah. We got a little over under true false variety pack for you today. First one, big game between the Tigers and the Irish, of course. Ian Book is averaging 204 yards passing per game in Notre Dame's 6 wins this season. So, over-under, 204 yards passing for Ian Book against the Clemson defense on Saturday.
If is the biggest word in sports. If Notre Dame wins this game Saturday night, the number will have to be larger than 204.
I agree. Yep. I'm going to go over. I'm not saying Notre Dame's going to win, but I think he'll have to throw the ball for them to win. How's that?
I just think, Wes, when you have matchups with really good teams, and both these teams are really, really good, what really good teams do when they play people is they take away your strength and they just say, okay, cool.
That's it.
How good is your weakness? And so I think in this particular game, I think Venables will look at that Notre Dame offensive line and go, man, they're outstanding, terrific backs. But you know what? We know you can do that, so let's see what you can't do. Well, we're going to force Ian Book to throw it and test us downfield. And I think Notre Dame will try to do the exact same thing to Clemson and say, okay, hey, you know what? Travis Etienne's great, but if we take him away, can your freshman quarterback – handle what we're going to do in terms of disguising blitzes and different looks and so forth. So I think this is a matter of, hey, whose weakness does better on Saturday night? That's going to be the winner of the game. So for Notre Dame, if the number's 204, if it's over 204, I think that's a good sign for the Irish.
Yeah, I do too. I think that 204, it has to be that number in order for it to be close and certainly give them the best chance to win for sure.
Mm-hmm. I know it has to be, but will it be? Both of you.
Yeah, oh yeah, I'm going over 204. I think the game will be very close, and I think he'll have to throw the ball for more than 204. And since I think the game will be close, I'll take the over. Absolutely.
I agree. Totally agree with that.
There you go. Next one, true or false for you. Tight end Billy Kemp leads the ACC in receptions with 45. Tight end Hunter Long of BC is tied for second with 41. So, true or false, a tight end will finish the season with the most catches in the conference.
False.
Well, Billy Kemp and Jordan Addison and Hunter Long are the only three guys in the league with 40 or more. The way Kemp lines up, he's going to touch it a lot more than Hunter Long is. Now, Billy Kemp at one point was averaging 9 catches a game. That's important to – so there's the kind of the post, if you will, in this. Hunter Long's going to get a lot of stuff every time BC plays, but I think Billy Kemp touches it more often. Therefore, I think Billy Kemp will be the ACC leader in receptions when the season's done. Jordan Addison is going to have to be close. The problem I have with Addison is that I know what I'm getting with Kenny Pickett. I don't necessarily know what I'm getting with Jake Yellen. So, therefore, I would say I like Billy Kemp to win the receiving title in terms of number of catches for sure.
But here's what you do know about Pitt. They just simply cannot run the football. And if you're not going to run the ball, whether it be fill in the blank, Pickett, fill in the blank, Yellen, fill in the blank, whoever you got a quarterback, they're going to have to toss it, Wes.
Yeah.
They're going to have to throw it. They just simply cannot run the football. They're 14th. Out of 15 teams. So going back to the question, though, I do not believe a tight end will be the leading receiver in the ACC this year.
I'm going to be surprised if it's not Billy Kemp. I mean, the guy just touches the football so many different ways, and they throw it to him almost like it's a running play sometimes. So, therefore, I would, you know, that's how I think he ended up with averaging 9 catches a game to start the season.
Unless De'Ami Brown goes for another dozen. You know, or because let me tell you something, Sam Howell and those boys are going to have to toss it all over the yard too. So, there are too many good wide receivers.
Going back to
the question.
But, Mark, to the point, Amari Rodgers and Tutu Atwell also have 40 catches. But those guys are – Tutu Atwell and Amari Rodgers also touch it like it's a run play sometimes. So I'd say they have a chance. But Billy Kemp is like – the singular guy. And with Lavelle Davis out, Kemp's actually touched it a lot more. Right. So, you know, take one from the other, but I think Kemp has a real good chance to win the receiving title in terms of number of catches. Doesn't mean receptions per game, yards, whatever, but in terms of just sheer number, I think Billy Kemp's got the best shot.
Yep.
All right, guys. Florida State has posted at least 405 yards of total offense in three straight ACC games for the first time since 2016. They'd done it against Notre Dame, North Carolina, and Louisville. So over under 405 yards of total offense for the Noles Saturday against Pitt.
All right, Pack, when I saw this last week, or I saw that this week when I was looking at the notes, is that not unbelievable that it's 4 years since they've done that in three straight games?
Yeah.
And now what does that say?
Well, I mean, and plus, if you're so used to watching those dudes with awesome unis going up down the field at will against everybody, it just goes to show you how crazy it's been in Tallahassee, and why their fan base is just like, man, we just need to get back to doing what we normally do, and that's going to take some time. This is a tough question because you know how much I love Pitt's D. You know how much I love Paris Ford, and obviously Ford is out. So this defense has struggled, let's be honest, and I hate to say it because I'm so high on Pitt, and I love Pat Narduzzi, but this defense has not gotten the job done in October. Now you're telling me you're going to take Paris Ford out? And Florida State, you know, playing with a little bit more enthusiasm and interest on the offensive side. Wes, I'm going to go over, and that goes against everything I normally stand for, but I think they can do it again. I worry about Pitt. I do. I just, with Ford gone, offense just can't sustain any kind of drives. Time of possession's a problem. They can't run. They're always throwing it. I think Florida State can line up some yards against Pitt this weekend. I do.
I don't know, Mark. I'm still looking to see who's going to make plays for Florida State on a consistent basis. I know they've got a playmaker at quarterback in Jordan Travis. I'm going to take the under here, or the false here. Which part of this, Josh, am I going with? The under or the false?
It is over under.
so we'll go under
405 total yards under for Florida State.
Okay. I'm going under the 405 here on Saturday. How's that?
Okay. All right. Keep your eye on this curveball then, Wes, because we've done a true or false. We've done an over-under. How about a fill-in-the-blank? There are five ACC teams with just two wins on the season, but obviously not all two wins are created equal. So of the two-win teams in the league, Virginia, Georgia Tech, Florida State, Duke, and Louisville, the scariest of the bunch is blank. Please don't say true or false. You can answer now.
Virginia. Virginia.
You going to tell us why?
Louisville. If Louisville was not ravaged with the unknown for Saturday, I might give you Louisville. But because, and ironically, they're at Virginia. I know what Virginia is on both sides of the ball more so than I know what Louisville is right now on both sides of the ball because of the unknown. How's that, Pack?
Because I was going to lean Louisville on this, but I think Virginia is the best of those teams collectively. If you're telling me, hey, snap your fingers, they're all healthy, let's go play. I think the best of that lot is Virginia. But I think the word there that leans on here is scariest. To me, Louisville is the scariest because their offense is the one that can light everybody up. So I'm going to answer it Louisville from that perspective. I think Virginia is the best of those teams, but the scariest team when everybody gives you an A is Louisville.
I don't disagree with that, but of the known right now, I got to take Virginia. The Louisville unknown is what I have a problem with. When Scott Satterfield said the other day that he expects most of the people who were not available last week will not be available this week, and ironically they're playing one of those other two-win teams, and I've seen Virginia. Yeah, Louisville's offense is frightening, but Virginia right now I know more about in terms of a team that could have some success moving forward. Other two, by the way, Duke and Georgia Tech, turnover machines.
Right.
They got to calm down the turnovers.
Yeah, they're
absolutely got to calm down the turnovers.
And Armstrong being back solidifies the offensive side for Virginia. Without him, I think it's a really easy question in Louisville. But I think Louisville, again, they're the one team that when they're hair is on fire offensively, man, they score on anybody. I don't care who's what's going on. So, again, another interesting game coming up.
By the way, kudos to us for getting fill in the blank right, Josh.
Good job. Good job. One more for you. Keep your eye on the ball here. Let's finish with the game of the weekend again. Notre Dame has given up only 6 scrimmage touchdowns to opponents this season in their 6 games. So over under 6 scrimmage touchdowns for Notre Dame's next 3 opponents. After the Tigers, they have Boston College and North Carolina.
Over.
Not even close.
Playing different animals now. Playing different teams now. Saturday starts a whole different setup for the Irish. Whole different deal.
Yeah, I mean, when you
they're really good on defense. Don't get me wrong, but they're this whole different deal now.
Right. And when you look at the teams that they have beaten to date, and again, you play who's on the schedule. I'm not complaining about anything here, but the quality of the opposition. Right. The next 3 weeks is a major step up versus what the Irish have seen the first 2 months of the season.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
If you ever wanted to know anything about the University of Virginia football program, this is the guy to talk to. Tim, good morning.
Good morning. I think you're kind of right about that.
I mean, nobody has seen more UVA football. I think you might have actually seen more Virginia football than Bronco Mendenhall. That is a possibility.
I don't know if this is true, but I heard that they're going to give Dave and I an office right in between Bronco and the coordinators, just to make meetings easier.
Man, you have scenes. But I will say this, though, and I know we'll have some fun with this, but how gutsy was that fake punt in the fourth quarter? I mean, you know, you've controlled the game. Everything's cool. North Carolina makes a run. They got a little momentum. You don't get the first down. We're inside 2 minutes. You're on your side of the field, and they go fake punt for the first down. How gutsy a move was that one?
That was really gutsy, and definitely got the sense talking to Bronco before the game that he felt like they were going to have to try to create opportunities, whether it was going for it on fourth down to extend a drive, or something as simple as a fake, or finding a way to come up with a turnover. Whether that, something different defensively or whatever it may be, they felt like they were maybe going to have to do that. And, but in that moment, listen, you're basically giving the football back at midfield to an offense that, was getting going a little bit and, would have certainly put you in kind of dangerous territory at that point. So a lot of risk, but the reward, obviously, pretty good considering, they had a drive earlier in that game that went for 9 minutes. And, that in and of itself was starting to limit what North Carolina could do offensively.
All right. But Tim, Saturday night, here comes Louisville, who just is electric with big plays, right? I mean, sometimes I think they score too fast. And they've got all sorts of different kind of igniters on that side of the ball. Cunningham, Atwell, Hawkins are the most notable. It almost feels like a yin and a yang game with Virginia and the quarterback rotation, the way they match personnel, the way they change packages, stuff like that. I mean, it feels like a tempo versus kind of slowdown game, if you will.
Yeah, and I think that there is an element of slowdown. That's not necessarily what Virginia is looking to do, but I feel like that's just what they have done because – with no Lavelle Davis the past 2 weeks, they've struggled a little bit outside at receiver. And so getting big plays has been a little bit more of a challenge for them than I think, they would like it to be. I will say this, Wes, and I know that you've had Louisville a few times this year. To me, I had their opener against Western Kentucky, and they obviously win that football game, and it was – kind of what you expected coming off of last year, some big plays and all of that stuff. Well, I think just based on their record, you know, I was expecting to see one thing and saw another. I'm still seeing a team that, you know, has a really good running back that can, I mean, he can take it the distance. They've got, still have receivers that are very good. The quarterback creates a lot of plays. And, you know, defensively, they are struggling. I think they've had some inopportune fumbles. You know, I think people have kind of talked about turnovers and kind of blamed it all on Cunningham. But I think their fumbles and when the fumbles have happened have been the biggest problem for them. And so a little more ball security. Look, I think they're a much closer group than their record would indicate. So I'm expecting a really good football game on Saturday night.
Tim, if I allowed you to be the defensive coordinator for Virginia, is it more of a nightmare to go up against North Carolina's offense or Louisville's offense?
I think I would probably say that I would rather face Louisville's offense. North Carolina has a better offensive line, and I think their scheme with their two backs plus the speed at wide receiver, that to me, you know, would be the thing that I probably, you know, would have the hardest time with. Now, saying that, you know, Cunningham's ability as a runner, you know, can be a bit of an equalizer in it. But I do believe this, and it was probably a little bit surprising to me, and I don't think it should have been. But, you know, talking to the Louisville coaches prior to the season, I think they felt like, hey, look, we're going to be good on the offensive line. And I think their reason for that type of optimism is that Dwayne Ledford does an excellent job coaching the offensive line. And I think they feel like they've got good enough players on that offensive line, and they're kind of developing a culture with it that's good. That being said, you know, any team in college that loses, you know, that both tackles that end up guys that play in the NFL, you know, you're going to have a drop-off. There's going to be some growing pains, and I think there has been. Like, correct me if I'm wrong, but, Wes, I think you had the Pittsburgh game, and the truth of the matter is they couldn't block Pittsburgh. They couldn't. Now, Pittsburgh's got a good front and whatever, but they couldn't block them, and to me that was the difference in the football game. So, you know, I think that ends up being why, you know, I would rather face, you know, Louisville than face North Carolina if I was a defense coordinator.
Yeah, I think the real question, you talk about some of the offensive elements, the turnovers, things like that. They're still kind of, and I think to Ledford's credit, he recognizes they're still trying to kind of sort out maybe a little bit of like Robbie Bell, who was starting at right guard at one point. Cameron DeGeorge has started the last few ball games. You know, Brown and Boone on the tackle positions. I mean, they're still trying to kind of get that chemistry and that confidence going. And meanwhile, you know, Cunningham still, I mean, he had, you know, big ball game last week, but he also had the turnovers too. I mean, he had the interceptions, and that's one of the things that kept the ball game really from Louisville, maybe in some ways having a chance to win. That and how good Hendon Hooker was too, Tim.
Yeah, and I think part of the deal with the interceptions, quite honestly, is, you know, as I'm, you know, preparing, and I watched a bunch yesterday and I'm writing stuff down, there's a bunch of these third and 12s, third and 7, third and 8. That's not playing to Cunningham's strength. It's just not. Mm-hmm. And so I think that you know, winning on early downs and being in third and threes, defending that offense with that running back, with the elusiveness of that quarterback, and some of the horizontal stretch that they force you to kind of manage because, you know, here comes Atwell motioning across the formation, you know, as the ball's being snapped. Like, there are a lot of options to defend. And, and Ford, the tight end, he's another one who he's played great this year. He's another guy where you're like, well, and now he's a big part of what they're doing. So, but when you're in third and 12, third and 8, and it feels much more like, hey, look, this is going to be a drop back game. Like, they're not running it. We're expecting drop back. That's not playing to his strength. And then when you're not holding up as well in pass protection and the pocket is not as clean, you know, then you start to see a little bit like what you saw against Georgia Tech, where pocket, there's you know, congestion in the pocket, ball's high, it's tipped, now there's an interception. So you know, I don't think it's as simple as like Cunningham's not seeing it and he's not delivering it in the right spot. I think they're behind the chains. It's forcing them to be in known passing situations. That's not their strength, and they're not holding up in pass pro. That's leading to some of the turnovers. But I also say this. The fumble kickoff in the second half of the Georgia Tech game, you know, a fumble, you know, by I don't forget if it was Hall or who it was, a fumble kind of in the next series. Like, but those turnovers hurt too. It's not just the quarterback.
Tim, do you have a vibe midweek about number one and number four in South Bend this weekend?
Here's what I would say. Everyone was talking about, you know, DJ's numbers and how he played and he filled in. And listen, for a kid's first start in that environment, you know, I think all in all, you have to be happy with it. Saying that, you know, it like that fumble return for a touchdown last week, if I were coaching the quarterback, that would be 100% on the quarterback. I mean, the ball was up around Etienne's neck. And so you just take something as simple as that. Look, guys, that would be a 14-point swing, you know, at minimum a 10-point swing. So when I see something like that, I feel like no matter, you know, if the backup quarterback throws for 300, you know, throws three touchdowns and runs for one, like that right there is the difference between Trevor and anybody else, you know, and like, that's a big deal. And there may be even more plays beyond that. So, like, do I have a feel? You know, I really don't. I think that, like, if I had to guess, I'd take Clemson. But, you know, one mistake in a closely contested game is a really big deal. Look, I was always taught that, you know, there's 3 to 4 gap plays a game, GAP, game-altering plays. You don't know when they're going to happen, and they decide the football game. It's actually something that Bronco preaches quite a bit to his football team. And, look, last week against Boston College, that really, if BC had the firepower in the second half, that was a game-altering play. Against Notre Dame, I don't think you can make those mistakes.
Great call. Tim, thanks for the time. Enjoy the show Saturday night. Louisville and Virginia is our primetime game here on ACC Network presented by GEICO. Stay well, my man.
See you guys.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Final segment on a Wednesday. Wes, very quickly before we get to our multiple topics, I've been exchanging text messages with a friend of the show, Elliot Avent, baseball coach at NC State, and he was following up on my little medical procedure yesterday and had a suggestion, because I told him, you know, I said on the air that I went and had a Bojangles biscuit, and he suggested some other locations. I said, dude, you got to understand, they're a sponsor. He said, well, get one thing straight.
Yeah.
He goes, I make the best fried chicken in two states. Elliot Avent, baseball coach, NC State.
Is that a dare? Is that a dare?
And I told him I am putting that on the air right there. So Elliot Avent, again, you know, we know Dave Clawson's a foodie, right? But Elliot Avent, baseball coach, NC State, says he makes the best fried chicken, and I'm assuming in the Carolinas when he mentions the two states. Just putting that out there. That we will
right,
put that to the test.
I mean, again, miss a little, you miss a lot on Packer and Durham, right? I mean, Elliot Avent, best fried chicken in two states.
Yep.
Not sure Duke and Carolina fans are familiar with the fact that Mark and I have renamed the Battle of the Victory Bell the Food Line Cup today.
That's
we just tagged that. Yeah. Dave Cutcliffe saying it was a grocery store game. Well, Food Line's a sponsor.
That's it.
Food Line Cup.
That's how we do it.
That's what they're playing for.
Yep.
We also give you tricky stuff on this date. We got stuff like that for you. On this date, Andy Demetra, voice of the Yellow Jackets at Georgia Tech, carved out a little history for us this morning. On this date, Pack, 1893, Georgia Tech football played its first ever game against Georgia.
Oh.
Mm-hmm, that's right. Led by Major General Leonard Wood, a 33-year-old Army vet and surgeon who was the team's quarterback and co-coach. Jackets won the game in part because of Lieutenant Woods' 3 touchdowns, 28-6. By the way, he was a Harvard grad, member of the Rough Riders in the Spanish-American War, and was Army's chief of staff, too.
How about that?
Leonard Wood, one of the great Georgia Tech heroes of all time.
That is a great one.
How about
right
that?
There. I like that.
There you go. Yeah. Appreciate Andy posting that. So how about Student Athletes of the Week? We come to the close of some of these fall campaigns in the regular season. We get ready for some tournaments later this week and next on ACC Network. We go to volleyball, Jade Parchment of NC State. Field hockey, Aaron Mattson. Carolina headlining there. Women's soccer, of course, their tournament this week. Swimming and diving.
All right.
All players of the week, and our congratulations from Packer and Durham.
Finally, some swimming and diving. I'm not sure we've had any swimming or diving news, right? Good to see them back.
That's where we are.
Like
we're getting there. We're getting there, moving along. Hey, you know what? There were some reports yesterday we might be seeing a basketball schedule sometime soon.
I saw that. You know, hey, Wes, it's November 4th. I mean, we're talking, it's apparently 3 weeks.
21 days, man.
3 weeks from today.
21 days, Pac.
It's go time, and we're still looking for some schedules. So if...
we got it worked out.
Yeah, if the folks in Greensboro will bestow that upon us, we'd be more than happy to unveil it to everyone. So just let us know.
No. Dude.
Just let us know.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.